What's up, everybody? Welcome to We Have Cool Friends, the cool show where we interview our cool friends about the cool things they're doing. I'm Greg, and this is my cool friend, Tim Schaefer.
Oh my God, that's such a great way to start the show with compliments, and I really feel like cool for some reason.
You should. I mean, I think that, you know, I there's a little bit of pre-production that goes into every show, which is basically we call you on Discord and then we bullshit around while Kevin troubleshoots things. It started with the comments right away with how good your hair looks from Kevin. And then I said how good your beard looks. Then, of course, we got out our beard brushes to compare beard brushes.
Do you still have your beard brush?
Of course.
Beard brushing time. It's like a solid 5 minutes of the show is just this.
Well, it's like when I ask you a really good question, you can sit there and be like, oh, that's a great question, Greg. You know what I mean? Do that. And do
this. I have this bad habit. I have this back scratcher that looks like a little skeleton hand. And during meetings, I find myself stroking my beard with it.
That's terrifying.
Do you have a little bionic monkey that's trying to
It looks like you got a little Terminator monkey.
Get out of here. Get out of here, Terminator monkey. Nobody wants that.
Well, it's great to talk to you guys.
It's great to talk to you, Tim. Of course, if people don't know you, how do you describe yourself?
5'10". I'm a Leo.
Sure,
right?
Of course, yeah.
if people in games, I've been working in games. You know, this is like 30 years for me.
Yeah,
that's how fucking old. And 20 years for my company, Double Fine.
Yep.
Which we've been doing for since 2000. The year 2000. I was talking to Girls Make Games. You know, Girls Make Games.
Great program.
They had a virtual visit to Double Fine, I was talking about in the year 2000. Still sounds all futuristic to me. Jimmy Fallon. The year 2000. The girls are like, none of them were born. That was weirding me out. Anyway.
That's the bigger thing. It's not that if it sounds futuristic to me anymore, because it does. It's that it sounds recent. 2000. Yeah. Even when somebody's like, oh, yeah, like when it happened in 2007, you're like, oh, yeah, 13 years ago. Oh, my God. Oh, no, God. That wasn't recent.
Oh, my God. Yeah. In the 90s, I made adventure games at LucasArts, but fewer people, even maybe more people. I don't know what people know anymore. What do I know? I'm just doing my thing. I'm just Tim, Greg's cool friend, Tim.
Exactly.
That's all you need to know.
And so it's one of those things for sure that, you know, you are our cool friend. Tim Schaefer, of course, you've been my cool friend since Up at Noon when you were like the first Up at Noon guest. I think you came, you know, you sent us people for the pilots. You were too important to come to the pilot.
Well, I didn't know how dangerous it was. I didn't know if it was safe.
Sure. That's
so
fair.
I sent human test subjects to
exactly,
find out.
They
came back alive. So then I did it.
And then ever since
I can't turn it on unless the cameras are on. So, you know, it's not going to be a real show.
The cameras were on for the pilot. Like, you know, we were filming things. It was just, they weren't going up anywhere.
That it's like a tree falling down in a forest.
But there was an audience. Like, you know what I mean?
Record something in the forest with me that no one can hear?
we put it in a time capsule 20 years from now. We bust it out of what it would have been. No, on top of course, being our cool friend there, you've obviously always been incredibly cool to kind of funny. And I think since we broke out on our own, you've, of course, been on all sorts of shows. I think you were the first developer guest host ever to come in and do Colin and Greg Live, which became the morning show, which became a million different shows. You've always been down to clown. You came in on the most short notice of all time for the Kind of Funny Game Showcase cold intro, where I think I emailed you guys that day. And I was like,
screamed at me and yelled at me.
Yeah, exactly. Can you come in and just get screamed at? You're like, yeah, we'll be there. No problem. Don't worry about it.
Anything for Greg.
In all this time, in all these years of friendship, this is the first time we've sat down on camera since you sold the fuck out. Talk to me about that. Just giving up on
Has it really been that that long?
Yeah, we haven't had a real interview or a real podcast with you since you.
Yeah.
Of course,
Microsoft
bought you.
That's right. Yeah, I'm too big now to talk to you. I forgot. That's the thing. Now
let me tell you, there was so much red tape to go through in the Xbox first party studio on. Oh my gosh, I had to jump through with Microsoft.
Did you? Wait, I thought you just called SPAF.
No, exactly. I'm being 100% facetious. Nothing has changed on my end of it, which is why I'm interested to talk to you about it.
Yeah, because that's the way, you know, that was the promise. Is like I was like, I don't really want to. I mean, I wasn't looking to sell, but I was like, would we have to put like a big logo up in our lobby, and one of my email be like tim@microsoft.com. Although actually it'd be that'd be pretty good email. Anyway, like we have to change my email, and they're like, no, you're gonna stay Double Fine. You stay your own business. Just you're part of Xbox, and your games go on Game Pass, and that's what it's all about. And it started to make sense to me when they saw that they wanted to leave us, you know, as we were, and not like, okay, you're going to do the Forza DLC. That's what we want, you know, acquihire all you great programmers. And but that's not what they wanted at all. And that's why I made those jokes on stage when they did the announcement about us making Excel games and Forza games, because it was the opposite of what was happening. They just want us to just keep being Double Fine, keep making stuff, and just not be as terrified about losing money and running out of payroll.
And so that's the thing. Obviously, I want to talk about where you're at right now, what this deal with Microsoft and Xbox is, and how it's, you know, there's a whole bunch of questions people had about how it's changed how you do operations. And again, you're Tim Schafer, legendary game developer. Everyone should know you. LucasArts, Full Throttle, all that jazz. But let's talk about Double Fine, because this week is the 20th anniversary of you guys starting Double Fine, correct?
Yeah, that's true. Holy cow.
What is that? Yeah, exactly. What is that like to say here and think about? Because I always joke around when people ask me about Kind of Funny, which has only been 5 years, that at the same time, it feels like it was yesterday, and it feels like I've been doing this for 30 years. What does it feel like to have 20 years going?
It's really nice because of how it, I don't want to say ended, but how it is right now, that it's in a really safe place, that it's, they're making, and we're right now we're doing what we did when we started. We're making Psychonauts games. We're working with Microsoft. This is how it all began. And and just to be doing it and having, you know, great, like, you know, Matt Booty and those guys are all great partners. You know, they're really, you know, give us a lot of space, and they value us doing creative stuff, you know, and value what we're doing. And so being in that position where we're safe, and we're, after all the years, all the roller coaster stuff we've been through of like the close calls, you know, the last minute reprieves from the dustbin of history, whatever, all the exciting stories, like to be in a safe place where we get to just do creative stuff and not worry about that anymore. It makes you feel really good, because, and you know, everything could have happened differently and it would have been a different story. I've been sitting here drinking and being like, yeah, games is a rough market, let me tell you, but those years of Double Fine. But now I'm going to say it was great. But it's, you know, 20 years is like, it's also interesting to have this team, you know, we have some people who worked there almost the entire time, 19, 18 years, a handful of those people, and then a handful of medium people, and then some new people. And it's great to see them all together. And you feel like you've just seen all these different eras of Double Fine go through. There's totally the Brutal Legend era, you know, it was totally different than the Psychonauts 1 era. And then the, you know, we were doing mobile games for a while, you know, like over that Middle Manager Justice, you know, we had all these different eras of people and just seen them all. And I've been watching like the, kind of like, you're like the Vampire Lestat in that I'm super hot and brooding, right?
Exactly.
And also I've seen many eras go by.
Exactly. Yeah. You don't age.
It's just the beard ages. The beard does all my aging for me.
Exactly. Exactly. So for somebody who didn't know, how does Double Fine start?
Double Fine start. So I'd worked at LucasArts for the 90s, all through the 90s, doing adventure games. And after we did Day of the Tentacle and Full Throttle and Grim Fandango, I wanted to start my own company, partially because eventually it felt like a lot of some things were winding down there. And also I wanted to just have, you know, control over how we treated our employees, because big companies, they have limited control. They can't give people, they can't be as flexible with people. And so I wanted to have this. So I started, just left. I had no idea what I was doing, which is probably the only reason you could do it. And I you know, then started noodling around with, you know, notebooks, just me in my bathrobe, and notebooks and flip-flops, and, you know, calling a few friends on the phone, talking about game ideas. And I had this idea for Psychonauts. And then was calling around. I could still get like a meeting with publishers and stuff, which was an advantage. You know?
Sure. And then was pitching it. This guy made Full Throttle. Let him in.
Yeah. And then I went to the GDC to do a talk on character design. And it happened to be the year that, you know, Bill Gates was there and he announced the Xbox. Yeah. And I was like, oh, I wonder if I can get involved in that. That sounds pretty cool. And then Ed Freese came up after my talk and was like, hey, it sounds like a cool, you should be on Xbox. And that's kind of where it took off there. So we did, we started Psychonauts 1 with Microsoft. And we just don't need to finish that story. It all ended fine. Everything went well.
Finish the story. What do you mean? What happened?
Well, we got canceled. Microsoft canceled us. And then we almost went out of business. But then Majesco signed us. And then we went on to do Brutal Legend. And that got canceled. But we got that re-signed with EA. And that was great. And then we started doing smaller games like Costume Quest, which you've heard of.
Oh, yeah.
And Stacking and Iron Brigade. And we did a game with Sesame Street. And then we did a bunch of other games, Massive Chalice and Broken Age was our big Kickstarter that we had a little while back.
Massive Chalice, criminally underplayed.
Yeah, you should play it. It's a great, great game.
No, I did play it. I'm saying.
Great. Awesome. And you mean a lot of criminals have played it, but not that much. That's what you're saying. That's what you mean.
Exactly.
And then after Broken Age, I was like, I want to make a big game again. And that just, now we're still making it because it's so big.
Yeah, Psychonauts 2, huh? That keeps keeps getting delayed. It keeps getting pushed around there. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
I make no apologies. Because it's, well, I mean, I will apologize to people, the backers. Like, if you back something and they have to wait a long time, I'll apologize for that. And I'll apologize to people funding the game, but just generally people who are like, finish that game. Like, we, you know, this is probably going to give me trouble, but I feel like it's always good news when you hear a game got delayed, and this sounds really self-serving, of course, but it's because there's an opposite side of that story, which is game not quite finished gets pushed out the door because people needed revenue in Q3, you know? Totally. And so, because no one makes that press announcement. No one who's like, hey, this game's not ready, but we decided to not delay it. We decided to ship it. And then you just get this game. You're like, this feels kind of undercooked.
This sucks.
So you never get to like react to that news story because it's never made into a news story. But the news story of being delayed is always announced. And that's why that is the better version of that. You know, you'd rather have a game be delayed so it's good than have it not delayed and be bad.
I know, you know, it's always interesting. We're in the same industry, but on very different sides of it. And I know you're obviously running a studio, heads down, making a game, doing all that. For sure, in my 13 years of doing this, we're at the point that the majority of people understand that. I think for the most part, when you see a game get delayed now, there is still the initial, oh man, I was looking forward to that. But it is the take as much time as you need from the people who are the rational gamers you want anyway, not
that's
the people who just want to be mad.
That's kind of funny audience that spoiled you. They're obviously
a very evolved,
well-educated group.
That's all true.
Not pandering to you guys. That's all true.
No,
well,
but
I get angry tweets. I get people going like, "How do you defend yourself?"
Oh no, you get angry tweets about everything. That's the internet, Tim. You know that. Tomorrow you just put up something innocuous. Man, I love the color blue. People are gonna be like, "Oh, so you're anti-green?" Like, no, that's not what I'm saying at all. I like this thing. Isn't that okay? I can't believe you.
Yeah, fuck green.
You blue fanboy, get out of here,
my
Kevin.
Yeah, green's my favorite color.
So, talk to me then about this. What don't we as gamers get about you as developers, and specifically indie developers, and what you guys have had going on at Double Fine before getting purchased by Microsoft? You talk about this 20 years we're at now, and I want to get to all the benefits Microsoft gives you now. But you talk about, you know, okay, well, the game got canceled. We almost went out of business. This happened, blah, blah, blah. Like, how close were we to not having Double Fine multiple times?
I mean, very close. Like, we... After, you know, Psychonauts was canceled, and I pitched that game to everybody. Everybody passed on it. Every single person. And I had borrowed a bunch of money, a personal loan. Sure. I talked to this a little bit. Yeah. And then we were going to get it signed with another. Finally, a publisher came through. And then that's why I took the loan out, because I was like, this is a sure thing because we've got this publisher. And then they backed out. And I was just in the hole for this thing. And I was like, and it was like next Wednesday is our last payroll. Like, I made this announcement to everybody. And I was like, oh. I remember I announced that to everyone. Next Wednesday is the next payroll. And there was absolutely quiet in the room, but my throat got all, and I couldn't talk. And I was like, I could hear the birds tweeting outside and stuff like that. And they just sat there together for like 15, 20 seconds straight, quiet. You know? And I was like, and then I went back to my desk, and there was an email from Majesco, who I had not heard of. I had not heard of Majesco at that point. And they're like, hey, we're interested in this game. And I was like, ugh. So we,
there's a lot of interested parties, so let's get to negotiating.
Pass. And Seamus Blackley was our agent at the time, you know, father of the Xbox and the sourdough maker. He's got a very varied career, and he helped us get re-signed with Majesco, and that was great. So very close. So I don't know if your original question is like, what don't we know about any development, except for that it's very close to the. I mean, it's not like it's riskier than being at a big company. I feel like big companies, small companies are like big and little airplanes. I think like in a little airplane, you just feel it going up and down, and it's terrifying a lot. If you go in like a small airplane, and a big 747, you don't feel the bumps, but they're not intrinsically,
if
one's safer than the other, but it's like, if you work at a big, publisher like EA or something, your job's not special precious day. You can get laid off like that. Like, just a game's over, lay off 300 people. You know, a lot of the big companies will do that. So your job's not any more secure at a big company than a little company. A little company, we're 100%, you know, committed to everyone's job. We do anything we can to keep everyone's job. So it's, I don't know, I'm probably just giving my speech. I give people when they come to interview at Double Fine, they ask about security. And I'm like, listen, big planes, little planes. You know?
Don't go to EA. You don't, you want to stay in downtown SF. Don't go down to the Outer Bay. Come on. It's cooler here.
More human feces on the street. Come on.
Exactly. It's way better. They got tacos. It's dynamite. Okay. So that said, and you get past that, where you get past Psychonauts, obviously. You get Psychonauts out. Is it clear sailing from there, or is it all, are you always not paycheck to paycheck? But I mean, there is this, is there a looming fear over you, I guess, that you know you have dozens of lives attached to yours now that you need to make sure they're getting paid? And are there moments where you're looking at it and going like, I don't know if it's going to happen again in 2 months. I don't know where we're going to be.
Yeah. Every night when you go to bed, you're like, oh, I got 65 people. I got to, you got them and their healthcare, and everything is all riding on your ability to kind of like lay down track in front of the train that's running and you can't stop it. So that you just get used to that kind of stress. Cause like stuff, when I first started the company, someone was like, things always work out. They never work out exactly as you thought, but things always work out. And who knows, maybe if the company had gone under, I would have started some other company. It'd be super, I would have made a super successful hit game. And we'd be
sure.
Yeah.
You could have been Flappy Bird.
Yeah, I could have been Flappy Bird. No, but things do work out. But there is every game, you know, we have these periods where we're funded for a long time, like during Brutal Legend. We had a lot of money and we were funded. And then they have these periods of ups and downs where you know, and I think, you know, during, and we are Kickstarter. We're like, oh, wow, we're funded for a long time. And then we have, you know, after the Kickstarter, where, you know, it's riskier. And so not anymore, though.
Now you can do whatever you want. Those suckers bought you.
Yeah.
Brutal Legend.
But, yeah, Brutal Legend.
Are you surprised by the fan base it has to this day?
No, it's awesome. Yeah. Game. Yeah. I mean, what do you mean by that? Like people that tweeted.
I mean, that was that thing of like, I remember when it came out and I remember the reviews and I remember being, oh, okay, it wasn't what we were expecting kind of thing. And it was like, all right, cool, whatever. Yeah. Brutal Legends, it didn't deliver, or it did, or however you are. But it seemed like it was one of those rare instances, I feel, where critically conversation kind of stopped. But then the audience wise were like, fuck you guys, we love Brutal Legend. And like, there's so many Brutal Legend questions people have written in for you. Like I think when Jack Black showed up during the Xbox showcase, when you guys were showing your Psychonauts 2 stuff, there was that moment where so many people flipped out thinking it was about to be Brutal Legend. And then we're just like, throw them together, which then reignites the conversation about a Brutal Legend 2.
Yeah. I mean, going back, that launch was just really weird. Cause we were like, you know, in some ways we had grown, you know, Psychonauts 1 was one type of thing, and the second Brutal Legend was just a huge game. We're kind of thinking like I bought a house that I was like, I don't think I can really afford this house, but Brutal Legend is going to be a huge hit. This is our big AAA play. It's going to be huge. It's going to be changes forever.
It's going to break the studio's breakout game.
And it did sell really well for us. Like it did sell, you know, it was a big seller for us. And the reception was so confusing because it was such a, it immediately went into this like shock about the RTS elements of it. And it was kind of frustrating because we had a big G4 like special about the RTS parts of it, you know, and we weren't allowed to call it RTS by no publisher that we had, because we had two that game. We're like, don't say RTS in Germany. In Germany, we can talk about RTS, but we can't talk about it here. It's like, what if people ask me if it's an RTS and be like, just change the subject. Just.
They'll never notice. They'll never notice if you don't answer the question and pivot.
But the impetus of that game is that ever since I played the first Warcraft RTS, like the initial game Warcraft, I was like, I want to make one of these games. Or Herzog's Vi, when I played Herzog's Vi on the Sega Genesis, I was like, I want to make a game like this, but I want to make it with Big Daddy Roth demons and hot rods and like guys like big bulging eyes and tongues hanging out of their mouths and stuff like that, hot rods. And that's what I want to make. And then anyway, it's a long story. Anyway, so
it's a long story. You're on a podcast just talking about yourself. We got to fill time. Tell the story. True. You can't give me the elevator pitch every time.
Let me start at an older. No. So, you know, we made the multiplayer stuff. We worked on that for the first year, nothing but the multiplayer, that RTS stuff. And then, you know, the first publisher, Vivendi, was like, people are going to be kind of confused by this. You should make a big, you know, we were going to have a single player part of the game, but it was going to be like a sequence of these multiplayer battles, and not multiplayer but skirmishes. And so they're like, well, you should make it more of a tutorial. And so it was like the missions became more tutorial, is about all these elements, and we dragged out the teaching of it. And then pretty soon it was really interesting because it took on this life of its own, and Jack Black got involved, and the characters felt, it got bigger, and the the world seemed to get more rich and lore filled. And then pretty soon that was the game that people were responding to. It was a single player game that started as like a tutorial for the game I was really making. And to this day, it's like a lesson that I've never 100% been sure what lesson to draw from it, because there's two voices in my head. And one of them, like when you give advice to young developers and stuff, is one of always be in touch with the thing about your game you really love, like the one most important thing. And you compromise on everything, but just don't compromise on that one thing, because it'll break your spirit and you just won't care about the game anymore. And I've said that to people. So like to me, it was like, well, what's the core of the game? What matters to you? Well, this RTS game with demons in it. And so then does that mean, okay, you stick to that. But there's this other, you know, another line of thought would be like, be open to what your game is and what people are responding to and adapt to that. You know, okay, people are really reacting to the single player experience and action adventure experience with Jack Black, and this is what it's about. And you should pivot to that. And so I really don't know what I believe is true, because I think if you do, you know, move into something that, unless you can truly accept it as something you can get into and cool, which I did like the single player game, you know, I did, but I still wonder if that you know, which is the advice I would give today, you know.
Do you regret like opening yourself up to it? Do you wish you had just said, no, it's this multiplayer RTS demons, that's what we're doing?
No, not that. I mean, the only regret I really have is we asked for, like, can we just have 3 more months, because we wanted to make the RTS parts are optional in the single player game, like that you could have Mangus take over the strategy for you and just do the action part, or you could actually just do the strategy and have Mangus do the action part, you know. And they're like, no, we're just gonna ship it, because they had two focus groups. One was that we did the multiplayer testing and we told people how to play it and they loved it. It was great. It's gonna be fun. And then there was another test where they just gave the game to people and they were totally confused by the multiplayer stuff. So it was like, when we taught people how to play it, they really liked it. And when we just gave them the game, they were often overwhelmed by it. So I feel like the fault was in our tutorializing of it. You know, if we could just, you know, have done a better job with that, people could, because here, let me go way back to where I really, one of my, one of the things that led me to be kind of taken surprised was that ActRaiser. You know ActRaiser?
I know ActRaiser.
Right? So on the Super Nintendo, right? Yeah. And you're playing ActRaiser. It's like a 2D side-scroller. You're punching guys, mini-bosses, da-da-da-da-da. And yeah, after, I don't even think it's after the first level. Maybe it's at the second level or somewhere in there. All of a sudden, between levels, they're like, oh, we don't have enough wheat in our village. You got to plant a bunch of wheat. You have this little, like, SimCity moment where you're like, you have to plant crops in this overworld map. And you have to, like, do this little city building. And everyone else who was playing it, we're at LucasArts, we're still at the ranch. And we were playing that. We're like, what the hell's happening? This game just turned into this other game. And we loved it. Like, I loved it. We're like, oh my God, this is just, it's more than I thought it was going to be. This is so surprising. It's not just a 2D side scroller. And that was always in my head. So I was like, I was worried that we weren't allowed to say the word RTS. Like, oh, maybe I should, you know, is this going to be, are people going to be, you know, what are they going to think when the RTS stuff happens? And I was like, well, it's a bigger, richer experience. They'll just be confused and delighted. They'll be excited to have this
There's
extra
more.
Thing.
There's more game. Great.
There's way more game. And it seemed to just take, the other message is what took hold. Like, what the fuck? How dare they introduce this RTS?
I was having fun with the other game. Why isn't this game now?
Yep. Anyway, but in the end, I love the game. I'm very proud of the game. If I can sit down with people and teach them how to play it, they'll love it too. I'm very confident about that. You know,
Tim Schafer video call comes with every copy now of Brutal Legend.
Well, every year on October 13th, I play it online with people, and we have a blast playing it, and it's fun. So take that.
I'm probably
not going to launch into a Brutal Legend 2, just for the record, because game is not going to be a sequel.
Oh yeah, your next Double Fine's next game is not a sequel. That's what we're confirming right now here on We Have Cool Friends.
I'll tell you, it's IGN.com. I mean, because, like, you know, starting with Broken Age, which was a little bit of a nostalgia thing because it was an adventure game. Like
when you made your big stink, nobody will fund adventure games anymore. Give us money and we'll do it. And everybody's like, money.
So that was a little bit of a retro thing, and then we did all those remasters of Grim and Throttle and Dead Tentacle, which is great fun, but that was also a kind of a trip to the past. And then now we're doing Psychonauts 2, which is a sequel. So I feel like ever since 2012, I've been looking backwards a little bit, and I'm like, okay, from now on, after this game, for a long time, I'm just gonna do original new stuff, brand new, shiny new stuff.
One of the things to piggyback off of here, you talk about with Brutal Legend 2 having two publishers, right? And don't do the Terminator monkey. Don't your Terminator monkey hand. That was just you, me, and Kevin, right? So no one understands that reference because that was before we were recording. Anyway, so doesn't matter.
I built a little monkey to protect me. And we call it the Terminator monkey, and I can depend on him. He'll stand guard.
Oh yeah, totally. With his very, very long arms. Very, very long arms.
Hey guys.
What?
I was just gonna mention, like, I've been looking at different brushes to buy on Amazon. Should I get a boar one with boar hair?
I think this is boar hair. Option?
Yeah. Well, the other ones just don't say boar
monkey hair.
Hair?
I mean that sounds pretty. I mean, if you boar. Yeah. Boar. Is yours a Diane? Mine's a Diane.
No, mine's there's no branding on mine, which means
it's clearly the same one. You guys bought
the same
one.
It's like one of those makeup channels. Here's my.
Hey everybody, welcome to my channel. I'm doing an unboxing here. We're just going through what we got.
Sorry.
This is my monkey's paw back scratcher that I use.
You can use my creator code on Amazon to get it. It's Tim of Legend. You talk about Brutal Legend 2 and the two publishers and the focus groups and that, you know, trying to decide from that and stuff. And I remember when you did Broken Age, and it was, I've pitched this, no publishers are interested in adventure games. I'm doing this with you. Get on board with us. You know, let's fund this if you want this kind of thing. And obviously it went so incredibly well. Like, you know, I mean, at the time, and I'm not even sure where it is now, but like in so many ways for games put Kickstarter on the map, I think, in terms of what that thing was.
Big deal. Yeah.
Yeah. Was that
happy times?
Were you, I think of Tim Schafer as such a jovial, happy, carefree young man. You know what I mean?
That shows what you know.
I know, right?
Blacker than this heart.
The first time we ever got a beer, we got into deep shit. And I remember that was like the only time we're like, oh man, Tim's got some stuff going on. But in this situation, did it turn you against the publisher, the usual relationship? Like, does that jade you? I know you've been around so long and done it in so many different ways. Did you think when you found Kickstarter that you could say goodbye to the traditional publisher model, and or did you want to?
I mean, there was definitely a sense. I would say I was more bitter about publishers early on because Psychonauts had such a rough ride and was treated so it was more like the ones that strung us along. They took our bank numbers, they were going to send us money, and then they stopped calling us back, and just like there's some bad behavior. But there was this time where we were like, crowdfunding is the future, we're just going to fund everything this way. And it's funny, some things have, like in board games have really adopted crowdfunding. Like a lot of board gaming is funded through that, you know. Some people just, that's how they, it's like it's doing pre-orders because they have such a risk of cost of goods because they have physical stuff they have to make. So that industry has just changed into like a big crowdfunding is now a big part of their development. Some companies don't need to do it, but it's a lot of companies, just their regular thing is like, well, let's launch a Kickstarter. But in games, it didn't really grow. Like, I thought it would grow. Like, you know, we did it, and, you know, Fergus and Brian, you know, did it with Obsidian and in Exile, and they made even more, you know, and it seemed like it was going to keep growing. I was like, if we could get like 5 million or something like that, we can make nice little, that sounds huge to a lot of people, but that's still, that's a small indie game, right?
For games, that's still nothing, right?
Well, that's not a small indie game. That's
medium sized indie game.
But yeah. We could keep doing, but it didn't really keep growing with that. Like, we crowdfunded Psychonauts 2 a little bit, like a portion of it, but it's not going to be the majority of the budget by the end of it, you know. So, but it was exciting to think we didn't have to go through gatekeepers anymore. Sure. Like, that was the thing. Like, I want to have a creative idea. Like that thing about adventure games is like, okay, I want to make an adventure game, and somebody else wants to buy an adventure game, but somebody in the middle is like, that's not feasible. You can't do that. And so you're like, well, you can bypass that person, just talk to people directly. And that was the promise of that, and it worked. And I think we could still do that if we wanted to make games of a certain budget, you know.
Sure. But you want to go big. Sure. That's why your next game is a AAA new IP. Very exciting.
Nice. Triple A. Just new. Just who knows what
just
size.
Just new. Okay, not triple A. Not triple A. Okay, it's going to be small.
I mean, triple A in quality, of course.
Of course. It's a Double Fine game. It's always triple A in quality. Don't worry about that part.
But I'm not bitter about publishers. They're just people. Just messed up people who are just trying to do
just do people with no talent who sit there in the way of the artist trying to get some bucks.
I am not, like, it's just everyone's trying to, you know, make a living. And indie developers are also trying to make money and trying to make a living and stuff like that. It's just there's a lot of people in between who's, you know, when there are a lot of people doing just risk mitigation, like, okay, let's, how do we prove that we're not going to lose money on this? And it becomes such a big overhead. You're spending so much of your time just talking about, you know, the risk mitigation of something that it becomes a foregone conclusion that's going to just, it rounds off all the sharp corners. And, well, you know, we have this character who says this weird thing and that could, that brings in a risk. Let's just get rid of that. Let's get rid of this other thing. Let's get rid of this. Let's not say RTS. Let's just get rid of all the risks, you know, and whatever. So that's great. We're lucky. We're so lucky to have this job. Bitter. I'm not bitter about anything.
Is all of that in your head, though, when Microsoft approaches you about wanting to buy Double Fine? Like, is there a part of you that's like, all right, this is too good to be true? You're going to tell me eventually not to say RTS. I'm going to be making avatar items.
At first, you know, I wasn't, you know, I never planned to get acquired. We talked about investment and stuff like that when that was, there's a lot of investment money flying around a couple of years ago. So I talked to, because I'd met, you know, I pitched games to Matt Booty before, and I met him before. I wanted to hear about it. And it was, that was two, those. Coming.
We're having some mic issues.
Did you find a beard brush?
I think I found a pretty good one. I'm looking at back scratchers now, but like, that's actually not why I'm chiming in. We're having some mic issues with your mic.
Me?
Yeah. There's like a weird.
Coming your throat is like a digitization.
Yeah,
now.
Like a grrr. Kind of noise.
Yeah, like, you know, you got a little on you.
What? Is that happening a lot? Constantly?
Or yeah, constantly.
Yeah, constantly.
How long has that been going on?
Just for like a minute.
Last three sentences, yeah.
Do you think I'm losing power?
Maybe you're low on battery. Greg, you want this cut out or are we leaving this in?
Yeah, I'll leave this in. This is We Have Cool Friends. Hey, everybody. You know what? While we troubleshoot this, just remember, of course, this is We Have Cool Friends. It's our weekly interview show where we bring one of our cool friends to talk. If you like that, you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunny where you can support Kind of Funny, get your questions read here on the show, get the show ad-free, have a good time. You can even be like our Patreon producers, Mohammed, a.k.a. Momo, and Al Tribesman, the Predator, who supported us at that level. Your support, ladies and gentlemen, means the world to us. Even if you can't go to patreon.com/kindoffunny and kick us a few bucks, it would mean a lot if you went to youtube.com/kindoffunny, watch the videos, shared them with your friends, gave them the thumbs up, or went to a podcast service of your choice, liked it there, reviewed it there, subscribed to it there. Maybe if you do it one way, do the other way just for the hell of it. You know, help us out. Why not? We're still kind of a new show. Today we're brought to you by youtube.com/kindoffunny, but I'll tell you about that later. Anyways, Tim, now you talk and let's see how you sound.
God, that was really fucking professional. That
hey,
was
man,
really good.
That's what I do.
That
that's nice. What I do around here.
How does my voice sound now?
It's good.
You sound great now.
It's good. It's fixed.
You sound
I
like
think I plugged it in. No one can see this
bright
orange cable.
As a brand new beard brush. You know what I mean?
As rough and as delightful as Boar.
There it
Boar.
Is. Oh, yeah.
We're
yeah.
also sponsored at Kind of Funny by Boar. Boars and the hairs of boars. That's interesting. You know, we just talked about Kickstarter and stuff, but Patreon is something that's never been a big thing as far as indie game. Well, maybe some indie game developers doing it, but it's more on the content side. There's a lot of Patreon stuff going on, and that's stuck around. Like, that has not turned out to be a flash in the pan, right? It seems like that's
yeah, I think it's because our industries are so different. I shouldn't say that. Our sides of the industry are so different. Because I was working at IGN when you guys hit with Broken Age and blew it up, and everybody's like, oh my God. It was literally like the gold rush, right? There's money in these hills. We can go make whatever crazy fucking game we want and we'll get press for it. And in the beginning, that worked. And then when it was, every day we were getting 5 to 7 different games being like, we just launched a Kickstarter. You're like, okay.
It's not news anymore.
Yeah, exactly. And it wasn't even, it was just the market got so flooded. And I think what's fascinating to me about it is that I was always worried. I talk about this when I do interviews about Kind of Funny, right? I just did one with Craig, formerly of Game Attack. And we were talking about this of when we started on Patreon, we got to be we were the, I'd like to think, you know, because Jim Sterling was right before us, but we came out a month after him, and we had a little bit bigger reach and a bigger audience and a bigger, not reach, but a bigger coming out party. We made more money. We were all of a sudden like went from 0 to 100 on Patreon.
Better,
right?
Just say
like,
better. You were better.
Never, I would never say we're better than Jim Sterling. I don't want a rant video. No, I love you, Jim. And he does, his content is way different and way
he
more entertaining.
He does so much research. We just go in here and we just say stupid
things. I mean,
things.
We start fucking talking. We don't even know if it's right or wrong. No.
We don't even know if our beard brushes are boar or not.
But when we had this big, you know, thing and we were, you know, the talk of the town and we were the for a lot of people, their first time they'd ever heard of Patreon in our industry, for a lot of people, the first time they'd heard of Patreon. And I remember then when Easy Allies was getting ready to go. And I think even when Danny was getting ready to go and start theirs, both of those, I was like, here we go. Like, they're going to start their Patreons and people are going to leave ours. They're going to lower their pledges. Like, we're going to see a dip because someone's come to the platform. And I thought that because of Kickstarter in a lot of ways, where it seemed like the more games that went to Kickstarter, the less Kickstarter could make headlines and news. Whereas with ours, it was actually the opposite, where every time a new group, whether it's What's Good or, you know, Danny or Easy Allies or Min Max or, you know, the list goes on, goes and starts this, they bring their audience, and at least a portion of the audience has never used Patreon before. And now they come in, they do it because they're there for the person they fucking love. They come in, they do it, and then they're like, oh, you know, this is actually great. And they maybe chip us a dollar, somebody else a dollar. And it is a rising tide situation. And I think the difference there is, for us and what we do, like, you sign up, and I'm talking about us as podcaster, YouTube people, right? You sign up and the content starts right away. You get it right away. Whereas with Kickstarter, I feel like it's much more, myself included, that I've backed so many Kickstarters. And I mean, I'm talking stuff I've backed 5 years ago that I am still waiting on anything from. You know, look at you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, coward. That's me. You're waiting for me.
But it's that thing. So you do it, and I think that has a chilling effect on it, where it's like, well, I didn't even pay off this first time. Do I really want to go back in there? And it's such a niche audience being brought in. Like, you know, the board games people get brought in, but do they really convert to video game people? And an adventure game fan is being brought in to back your adventure game, but do they work to the person who's making the video game wrestling book or whatever? Like, it's this weird hodgepodge in a different way, whereas our group, you know, our groups, if you listen to a podcast about video games, hey, there's 100,000 other ones, and you can get a different name read anywhere you want to go do it.
Yeah, there was a little bit of that rising tides thing for games, and that people were, because at first people were mad that, you know, big name people like me and Brian can come in there and we're going to take all the money away from the little indies that are trying to crowdfund, and it turned out not be the case. So the more, you know, that we were just bringing people to the platform, and those people often did go on to back another game. But it did seem more than Patreon to be dependent on the novelty and the news factor of it, like a good story. Like, it was a good story that we were doing an adventure game. It was like, oh, this old adventure game guy, kids wants to do an adventure game. Help him out. That was a good story. And then it was surprising. And I think a lot of people backed it who didn't like it, who didn't even care about adventure games. They're like, what is this new thing? This is crazy, you know? And whereas Patreon seems to be, it never really has been, except for the first time I heard about it, it was never really been like a news thing. Like, oh, this person launched this Patreon, can you believe it? You know, it's like, no, it's been more of just like a low key voluntary subscription service.
Totally. It's a third party subscription service. That's how we use it. And you know how I think so many other people use it too. And yeah, I've been interested to see, I should say, to not see more game developers try to make Patreon work. Whereas I think it still is the Kickstarter, let's fund the game. And this, and I'm not saying that nobody uses Patreon. Famously, Ooblets, they do Patreon, I know. Yeah. But it is a weird thing of trying to figure out what that looks like on a, all right, cool, you're backing us here. What is the tangible reward that makes it an ongoing subscription? Whereas like Kickstarter is the one and done. I've put my money in and now I walk away. Whereas a Patreon usually is, you're there month in, month out, trying to get something different, trying to get your questions right if you're us or whatever.
Yep.
Yeah, so, you tried to dodge the question, and I won't allow it.
What was the question?
No. We had a whole bunch of mic stuff, and then we're just having fun. We're talking about boars and beard brushes and skeleton monkeys. Was all your bottleneck of 20 years of dealing with publishers and stuff? Do you believe Microsoft when they show up and want to do this? You said you knew Matt Booty. You knew Matt Booty was a good dude. Matt Booty, of course, over at Xbox, doing great things. Yeah. Was there this concern, though, still that you're going to get into this relationship and guess what? 7 months, a year in, they're going to be like, guess what? Now we do order this. Don't say RTS. This is what you're doing. Cancel that.
I mean, they could always. What I've learned to be more leery of is that, you know, companies are not, they don't have souls, and that they might have a charter and, you know, some sort of vision or whatever. Sure. But they're really just the people that are there, you know, and it's the fact that it's, you know, Matt Booty and all the crew that we met there that kind of gives me the faith in that, and Phil, you know, Spencer and all the great people there. You know, if they were just, somehow someone came along and was like, move them all, they all got fired, I'd be like, oh God. But that's what happened. that's what happened the first time, right? We got signed with Ed Fries, and we were like, Ed Fries believes in us and it's great. And then Ed left. And the new people came in and they're like, what are these games what's going on? They canceled a bunch of games. And so it's really about the people. So if you have faith in the people, then you have, you know, and their pitch, that, you know, that's what gave me the faith to do it. It's not the inherently good or bad about the company. Companies are just like, who's there at the time.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
And I asked them, I was like, you're going to change our culture. And I think I understood why they wanted to have us. I understood that if you have something like Game Pass, you have these, you know, big tentpole games, and then you need also a diverse content surrounding that stuff that, you know, after people, you know, sign into, you know, to Disney Plus to watch Hamilton, there's got to be something else to, you know, to watch in between, you know, and not that we can't be one of the big tentpoles, but like, you need, like, we can produce, you know, we're making those smaller games, like a game a year. We can have really, you know, we have a back catalog. We have a bunch of stuff that I think can add value to Game Pass. And I saw that it makes sense to have us do that. So that's why
was literally the conversation, not so much about you, but about Game Pass in general today on Games Daily. This question where somebody wrote in, they were like, you know, reacting to the Xbox game showcase that happened last week. We're recording this on Friday, but it was, you know, by the time they see this, it was last week. Wait, you know, way back when, you know, God, we barely remember it.
I don't remember that.
No, we don't remember. But it was this thing of the Xbox Game Showcase being this vehicle of, hey, this is what we're bringing to Game Pass and making Game Pass the platform in so many different ways, right? And then this conversation, I think, where, well, they didn't showcase what, you know, necessarily, why do you need an Xbox Series X? Well, you want the games that look the best, or you want to run the best. Yeah, sure. But like, and it was this question that got written in that was, I think I get it in the way that, sure, not everything was a tentpole yesterday. Not everything was a AAA gigantic game. Some of them were AA's. There's these smaller things going on. But that's what's keeping you subscribed to Game Pass, right? Like, that's the point of bringing you through the door and keeping you on the subscription train, is the fact that they have people like Double Fine, that they have things like Everwild, right?
Wild,
yeah, they have all these different games on there that they aren't Halo and they aren't the next Gears game, but they are something that you're going to be stoked to play. And I think that's what I've seen with them making these, you know, console launch exclusives, where it does be, somebody was like, well, I forget which game they were talking about, but like today in the chat, they were like, I really hope that this game, it eventually comes to other platforms. And I was like, I understand that, but I think we're having an antiquated conversation because we're still in the antiquated period of, by the time that game comes out, Xbox Game Pass Ultimate will be giving you xCloud everywhere. And if that's the case, why are you begging to spend $25 when it comes to PlayStation or whatever, or Switch, when you could spend the $1 right now to get a month, or when it's later on, $15 to get it in there and have it on a device, whether it be your computer, your phone, your whatever, your Xbox, right? Like, I think we're in this one, and I don't know, I want your opinion on this. I think we're in this interesting shift where I think in 3 months we're going to be talking about competition in a much different way than we are right now.
Yeah, I mean, I felt that something was going to happen with subscription. I'm very bad at seeing the future, but I definitely felt like the subscription stuff was, how could it not go the same way in some ways that you know, movies and TV is gone, and Xbox just had a really smart plan for it. They seem to have really thought about a lot of that stuff, and they really have a good plan for it. And just the fact they're talking to us meant they're super smart, right? That's obviously,
they got a good eye.
They can smell talent. But they also it also works out great for our kind of games, like stacking. You know, like a game about Russian dolls is an odd bird. Like it's not something someone I'm going to go see what kind of Russian doll games they have on this thing. You know, like it's a kind of game that in some ways no one's looking for, but if it's essentially free to them, cause they have Game Pass already and they see it, they're like, what are these crazy dolls? You know what? It's free. I'm going to try this. And they will. So for our kinds of games that hopefully if we're doing our job right, all of them are a little bit like that. All of them are a little surprising and weird. And you're like, what's this Halloween role-playing game? And you know, and it's just, it lowers that willingness to try, so everyone can just try our games, and I think that's when they do the best.
Yeah, and I think that's what's going to be so fascinating about this, as xCloud really puts it on any platform you could have, but also, you know, Xbox Series X and what's already happening, is the idea that, like, yeah, like, I would never, and this is, I guess, me being whatever, you know,
cool guy.
It makes me sound like a douche, actually, but like, I don't, like, based on what I've seen of Grounded, I'm always like, oh, that looks cool, but I wouldn't buy it. But guess what, I am not buying it. It's on Game Pass, and so next week I was listening to them record the Xcast today, and they're like, oh, you can preload it. Like, oh fuck, I gotta turn on my Xbox tonight and preload this just to have it when it's ready to go. And it's like, that, I think stacking is a great example of it, is that there are so many games that I think people would glance at but go, I'm not going to take the shot. Am I going to spend the $14.99 on that to jump into it? Not for that one game, but like for all these other games, for whatever it's bringing you in, for Halo.
I feel like in the end will be healthy for the like creativity and art on the platform, because people will try. They'll give a shot to these things they might not have given a shot to if they had to spend a lot of money.
As somebody who's both has such a lineage as an independent developer, and now somebody who's working so closely with Xbox, obviously, and doing and knows Game Pass this way. I've seen the one thing I've seen is this concern that it's going to lessen the value of games for independent developers and people who are making stuff and putting it on Game Pass. And then also this concern of how can this possibly be financially sound for Xbox? I think obviously you're making stuff for Xbox. So you're not like in these boardrooms, financials and everything else. I don't expect you to have an answer for that one. That's like incredibly hardcore. But for the other side, is Game Pass good? Are there cons to it for independent developers? Somebody who wants to come in and sign this exclusivity deal that their game will be on Game Pass?
I mean, for me, it wasn't a question of is it good or bad. It's happening. Like, it's going to happen. And yeah. Then, and my fear is that it could either go Spotify or it could go Netflix. Like, independent developers don't make any money off Spotify. Like, the bands are not getting rich off Spotify. I don't think. If you're in a band, you're getting a check from Spotify.
You need a bajillion plays to make any money on Spotify.
Whereas Netflix and a lot of other subscription services are paying to create new original content. And it's led to a lot of great shows that didn't exist before from people like, they just found some talented person, like, here, have some money, make a show for our channel, right? Yeah. And a lot of great stuff that didn't exist before now exists because of that model. As opposed to, I don't think that's happening in like music in the same way as Spotify, right? So I was like, this Game Pass sounded a lot more like the good version of that model, where it's like, they're gonna have this long term plan where they're gonna create a bunch of great content for their channel and they're gonna invest in the content for their channel. So that's the one I want to be associated with.
And I think in a lot of ways, obviously, not just the purchase way of them buying Double Fine, but in the way you're talking earlier, right, about being an independent developer and going to bed and worrying about trying to pay all 65 people and having them have benefits and take care of their families. That's what these deals offer independent developers, right? Like, and I'm not, obviously not every deal is graded equally, yada, yada, yada. But it seems like the ones you do hear about from people are usually like, hey, we took this deal because it puts us into the black already. Like, it allows us to get a team. It allows us to support our people and not have it be this thing where we're mortgaging the house and worrying about everything. Like, I feel like that's a good thing.
Yeah. Did you see my first video where I announced why we did it?
I think so. You had the money falling out of your pockets, right?
No, it was just like, you know, they came to us. We're independent for 20 years and they came to us and they said, hey, would you like a bunch of money? And we said, yes. And I feel like in some ways you have to be honest with about it. That the money does remove a lot of problems, and it's nice to have. And we definitely were in touch with what it's like to be indie developer after, you know, being around 20 years of independent, you know, so that's going to be part of our mentalities forever.
Well,
like a rescued dog that had been abused.
Well, I thought that's what's been so cool this year with the new summer of Summer Game Fest. There's too many goddamn festivals going on. Summer Game Fest, but having Day of the Devs partnered with it, right? And having you still be there front and center with your daughter filming you in the backyard and talking about independent games that are there, right?
Yeah, I mean, we really were like too many games for just one of those shows. There's so many great indie games that you can see there, and yep, my daughter's a great camera person. She's really helped out a lot with my filming around the house. But yeah, Day of the Devs, and Day of the Devs will come back as a show in November.
Yeah.
And in San Francisco. So, you know, now we can do that. Because even that is a little more, in some ways, more of a pure thing for good now, because in the past, it was definitely something we did as a positive. We want to highlight great indie games. But we are also promoting our own. We got to promote our own games, and we got to find games for Double Fine Presents. Like, it was a little bit like I got a sneak peek at games we might want to publish and stuff. So there's another angle in there that they're, you know, of making money, even though it was a free show. It's still a free show, but now we don't, we're not going to do that much. You know, we're still doing, you know, publishing the games we are publishing. We're not signing any new people and doing Double Fine Presents anymore. So it's really just a show that we're doing just to have, highlight great indie games that we want to do. And so, you know, because Greg Rice went to Sony, so I'm here with Microsoft at Xbox, he's at Sony, so we decided to get a general group of people from all across the industry to be to make it really like platform agnostic.
Sure. So that's been one of the really cool things about it, is that first off, it's able to keep going. Secondly, you're able to still be a part of it, even though you're Xbox, but you can talk about PlayStation. Have Greg, who, this is like this Romeo and Juliet thing, but where you guys work together forever. He goes to PlayStation, but again, everybody's still cool to do this. And I didn't realize you were still doing a broader industry, like advisory board or something. Kevin, I'm sorry. Did I miss my? Did you take a message from Tim about putting me on that board, and I just didn't get it?
Yeah,
I've been spacing out. What's up?
Nah, it was a joke.
No, I know. I got it. I was just kidding.
No, you didn't. You're still looking at your beard brushes and back scratchers. Tim, I don't know if you know this. Kevin got a hot tub, and I know he is so close to having it figured out of how to run the shows from the hot tub. And it terrifies
me.
That sounds like an electrical problem. That sounds like a life-risking.
Hold on, guys. I can definitely run it from the hot tub. I'm just choosing not to because, like, I can't. Like, once I'm in the hot tub from at work, like, that's it. I just live in the hot tub at that point, right?
Yeah. I understand that. I respect it.
If you could find a way to draw nutrients from the water, too, that you would probably very... Very rarely,
no, Tim.
Leave
I like eating.
Them.
People will bring food to you if you pay them.
Yeah, you know? That's true. That's a good point.
That's what the quarantine's all about.
Yeah. Did you Tim, like the trailer? Did you watch the trailer? Did you like the trailer?
For which one?
Psychonauts 2.
Oh yeah, no, I'm sorry.
Well, I know it was like over a week ago. I know it was over.
I know it was so long ago. No, it was awesome when you had Jack Black show up in there. He's Mode of Light, right? That's his title.
He's from A Brain in the Jar. I did watch your coverage of that. I was scrubbing to find my name. I was like, trying to find the big chunk of your show where you talked about Psychonauts, but I found the big Halo chunk.
Yeah.
The big Fable chunk. I found the little
you're
You're
talking about the post show content.
Yeah.
When we talk about it during the reaction content, Tim, all right, I'll let you know. It's there.
Okay.
We'll talk about it. We're there. It's happening. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Because people, you know, you might think, this is my advice to you.
Sure,
people say, they want to hear about the big game. I want to hear, but no one wants to hear about that shit. They want to hear about Psychonauts. They want to hear about Psychonauts. Nothing but Psychonauts all the time.
Dude, I'll tell you, as somebody who builds the headlines and puts thumbnails in there, I have research that shows otherwise. You know?
But that's where the numbers are. They can fool you. That's
agree
a tricky thing about numbers.
It's like 100 people watching at one screen. That makes sense.
They're hate watching. That's the difference. You want people love watching, and that's what you get with Psychonauts content. 100% Psychonauts.
I'm stoked about it, dude. Like I talked about this on the stream, even though you didn't see it or whatever. Is that Psychonauts is a game I should be all about, and I tweeted you not too long ago a long time ago because I was on the road, and so it must have been last year. I don't remember. Maybe last summer even, where I had finally. I, for some reason, missed it during the PS2 era. And so now I had it reload. I had Psychonauts 1 loaded because that's what it was. I went to Judges Week last year for E3, saw the Psychonauts 2 demo with you, and was like, I've always known that this would be a franchise about I'd be into, right? Superpowers. Like, why wouldn't I be a part of this? And I just never made the time to play through the first game. And so I loaded it on the thing and started playing it. And I was enjoying it, but got distracted by some other review and moved on. And so now we're exactly how we were talking about Persona. I'm in the Psychonauts place where I have to restart Psychonauts again to then get ready
for
Psychonauts
2. Not as big as Persona.
You keep delaying Psychonauts 2, so I'm in no hurry. You know, I got time.
Oh, you throw that in my fucking face. I can't believe you do that. I think what it is that we're such good friends that you're scared to play it because you're like, what if I fucking hate Psychonauts? And then I got to talk to Tim about it, and I got to tell him, I don't care for it, sir. I don't like your game.
I've told you that about your other games before. It doesn't matter. That's always been.
I don't want to hear that.
We've had that conversation.
I don't want your opinions about stuff. I don't want to hear bad opinions about. We work hard on those games.
I know. No. Don't fucking turn the conversation. That's not what I'm saying is happening. I'm just saying when it's like, hey man, how does the beard brush open the fucking door? I'm like, I don't know. God, can I do something? Can I talk to someone? That's one of your adventure games. I was hoping it was dead. I was one of the people telling the publishers it was dead, and then here comes Broken Age. Two planes of action.
They're the more heady type of game. You need to be kind of intellectual to get through those games.
I know, and I'm a Budweiser drinking man who's like, just give me Costume Quest 3. What's wrong with you? And you're always Budweiser. Like, that's a Tasha game.
Is there a Budweiser in your house right now? Can you produce a Budweiser can?
No, I wish there was.
I knew it.
It's great. Budweiser out of a can. Great beer. Period.
I don't, I do like honest opinions about stuff mostly, actually, I feel like you always know. I've always felt like I know whether you did a good job with the game or not. And in the end, you always know whether it's good or not. And it really doesn't matter what anyone else says. And even 100%. If some people give you, if you sell a bunch and you get a bunch of praise and you're like, oh, we could have done better with that game, it'll always bug you. And the opposite is also true. But the thing has changed in the last like 5 years. I just stopped reading reviews. Like, I just don't read because I realize they're not for developers. They're developers. I think that's my advice to any developer. Reviews are not for you. And YouTube stuff, like, just, they're not for you. They're for other people. If you want honest feedback, you should do, like, you know, play testing with like blind play testing and stuff like that. If you want that kind of feedback, but reviews are like a whole different thing. Okay. And they're not good for you. They warp your mind.
You're saying right here, they make
you
angry,
and then you go on Twitter and you say something mean about it, and then everyone hates you, and they just don't read them.
Kevin's back because the mic's doing the thing again.
Yeah, it's Mike's.
My mic?
Yeah. Can you just?
Oh, so it wasn't.
I just started on that conversation, so yeah, just disconnect it and see what happens.
Disconnect it.
Yeah. Unplug it and see what happens. Then talk.
Hi. Hi. How do I sound now? Does it sound better or worse?
Same.
Can you
plug it back in?
Let's turn them on. Let's turn them off.
Oh, okay.
You can't hear us right now, Kevin. We can say whatever we want.
Oh, secret. I'm excited about this beard brush, you know?
When's your beard brush getting here, Kev? Did you get a lotion for the beard?
No, come on. I don't need to go that far. I don't have dandruff all over the place.
Yeah, well, it's not even a dandruff thing. It just makes the beard better.
I don't know.
Thicker, more full. I don't know. Look at Tim's beard.
Yeah, that's nature. He's not putting stuff in that. You know what I mean?
I'm
saying, like, he'd have the same full beard.
Headphones.
It sounds good.
Oh, he's back. He's back. Can you hear us?
Sounds good.
Flashbacks of Twitch yesterday. What's going on here?
Tim?
No, he just muted. He tried to mute himself in Discord.
He sounds better.
He sounds way better.
Yeah. I think his output's not going to the right place.
Well, no, it was fine, but he couldn't hear us.
No, he can't hear us. That's what I'm saying. So the audio output.
Kevin, drive to his house and fix it. All
right.
He's just flipping buttons now for an audio listener. While this is happening, remember, everybody, youtube.com/kindoffunny, patreon.com/kindoffunny. Be part of the show. Watch the show. It's good stuff.
He's smiling like he can hear us.
Can you hear us, Tim?
No, we can't hear him.
I can't hear you. But it's because you muted yourself in Discord. Don't touch anything else on the thing. You muted yourself in Discord. So like you gotta mouse over it and then I think now talk. Now it's fucked up. Now you're unmuted in Discord, but we still don't hear you. So now in Discord, go to the little user settings wheel. Kevin, you're better at this. You take control.
Oh, okay. Let me see. Hold on. Give me 2 seconds. I wasn't ready for this. So,
yeah, if you go to the lower left where your username is, there's the microphone, there's the headphones, and there's the little gear. If you click the gear, then you go in. You got to go to app settings,
voice and video. Yeah.
And then what is your input device and what is your output device? Switch those to whatever that headset is called. Not that I can't hear him. You know what I mean?
Technology's fun, you know?
It is fun.
It's just constantly
disappointing. Oh, now you just turned off a headset or something. I don't know what that means.
Oh, yeah. That. That's a new one.
No, I still can't hear you. Is it muted on the headset now?
Nope.
Plug the headset back in, maybe?
Just set your microphone to anything else right now just to try it.
That's true, too. All right, he's taking it back off, everybody. If you're an audio listener, patreon.com/kindoffunny.
You want to do that?
No, because there's no real... there's no real sponsor, and I don't want to do the thing where you got to make Cool Greg cut it out and stuff. So
that's
just
a good
like,
call. Mm-mm.
No, still don't hear him. You still don't hear you, Tim.
No.
No. What an abrupt ending for We Have Cool Friends, you know? He's still clicking around. I got to hear what happened yesterday on Twitch. He said, he's having Twitch flashback. What happened yesterday?
Maybe close and reopen Discord. You know, flip all the switches.
Sure, whatever. What could go wrong?
I don't know if he can hear us. You know, you could type into the thing.
Well, he keeps talking like we can hear him, but I think it's also that's when we would know if he was back.
Right.
So you want me to tell him, I could type that in there.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, hold on. I got too many keywords in front of me too, you know?
No, I don't. You have more than one keyboard?
I have the Mac now, right? I set up the desk so I have the Mac in front.
No, yeah.
So then
gross.
I have the thing over here. What was that?
I said, ew, gross. You remember earlier when I said, fuck green? I was just doing that to be cool with you. Green's also my favorite color. Don't tell Tim. I don't want him to know.
Okay, he's putting up...
I saw the finger, yeah. But he has to, like, close it fully.
Look how serious he is. I've never seen Tim Schafer this serious. If you're an audio listener, come here right now. Look at this. This is a serious man. This is a guy making game development decisions. Oh, he's typing something now.
You don't think he's beard?
Yes, stand by. And then he misspelled by, but then he corrected it. That's adorable.
All right.
I don't think this is going to fix it, Kev. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, I know. This is done. This is the end of the show.
I love quarantine content. I love it.
He tried his best. I popped on, so you know.
I love it. No, you can answer what it was like to work with Jack Black if you want.
funny guy, you know, nice. Really, really likes Chinese food, like a little bit too much.
Is that true?
No, I don't know. I just made that up. But, like, awesome. You believed it, you know what I mean?
I did think that was a real Jack Black story that I just was not aware of, Eddie.
You hung out with Jack Black. Jack Black, like, hey, what do you want? You want to get some Kung Pao chicken?
Yeah, and you're like, oh, yeah, sure. And then, like, you hang out with him the next day, and he's eating it for breakfast, but it's a new Kung Pao chicken.
Yeah, yeah.
He's in a green room. It's just a giant steamer tray full of Kung Pao chicken.
Oh, there we go. Tim's coming back, it looks like.
It's all coming back to me when you touch me like this.
You know what they don't tell you when you get a hot tub? How heavy the lifts, the covers are. They're really heavy.
Oh, over the top?
Yeah.
You want that sealed up tight. You don't want to.
No, yeah, absolutely. They do a fantastic. We unplugged it for like 2 days, like once we had it all set up. And like it stayed warm till the second day. It was really impressive.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
I saw you, of course, here on Kind of Funny, we do a show called In Review where you watch movies and you talk about them. I saw you watching Mizuguchi In Review. You guys were in the hot tub watching that one.
Mm-hmm. I don't.
You gonna get a real TV out there? You think, or is it always you're just gonna drag
the
iPad?
No, just the iPad. No, yeah. It's just in a temporary setup. We just put it in the corner, you know. But eventually, I want to do something a little nicer for it. Build a little deck. Put something around the deck. So maybe I'll get a TV in there. I don't know. He disappeared. I'm gonna re-invite him.
Okay.
No, his Discord is off.
And when we were like, do you want to try like disconnect and come back? He's like, yeah. He's like hard wiping his computer. He's like, no, you didn't mean reinstall everything from I got the
realistically he's probably restarting his computer.
Yeah, well he's one of these guys who likes PC gaming, so it's all so easy. You should have figured out no problem, you know what I mean?
Yeah. How often do you do this? How often do you sit there scrubbing your face?
The beard brush I use every morning, that's it.
Okay.
But now that it's here, it does feel good. Because I'm sure you're of the same variety of man I am. You're rubbing a dog. You're rubbing Cecil. I'm rubbing Porty, right? Uh-huh, and you're just
these are things
they never want this to end. And you think about getting a head rub, and you're like, yeah, that's good, I guess. And then you do this, you're like, if I was covered in hair, yeah, this is what I'd like. I would like it to be rubbed all the time. And like, think about if I was a cat and I was doing this like with my face, like this was static.
Mm-hmm.
I can see that too. You know what I mean?
Here's the thing. I kind of have the opposite. One, it's not the opposite, but like I'm thinking at a different perspective when I'm petting my dog, where it's like it's so weird that he's just so into this.
Yeah, I'm gonna show.
Oh wait, he's back. He's back.
We can hear you.
We're talking to his wife, I think.
Hold on.
Not right this second.
Yeah, I'm gonna live with these guys.
Eventually, you can help me carry the mirror.
Oh,
can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, can you see me?
Not yet. No, I think your camera's off. If you want to come click on the, I think you might have to click on turn on camera.
Where's the turn on camera button?
If you mouse over all the things, it should bring up a little dial. One's a camera, one's a share your screen, one's a mic, one's a hang upper.
Yep.
The first one you should say, it should, if you hover, there you go.
Something's there it is.
Look at my new headphones. You like my new headphones?
I love it. Nice. I love it. Now, real quick.
You guys, I do what? Real quick, what?
If you want, I mean, we're in the middle of a break. If you want to go help with the mirrors, you can go help with the mirrors.
Oh my God, you heard all that stuff.
That's all we heard at the end, just the mirror stuff.
What do you mean, in the middle of a break? Isn't it like pre-recorded?
Oh, yeah, no. But I mean, me and Kevin are just bullshitting around. If this is the time for you to go help your wife with the mirrors, we got no problem bullshitting around for the
five minutes. It's so funny.
You guys are my excuse. Come on.
Oh, sorry. Okay, cool. No, it's fine. Right back to work and double fun and all that stuff.
Yeah, it's beard time. Everyone has a brush on it. Good.
Yeah, we were getting into it.
Notice you there. You caught me brushing my beard.
Oh, man, what a day.
That's
what
how I keep all the lice out. It's Friday, you guys. TGIF. Woo!
No, it's Monday. It's Monday. Remember, if you're watching this on Monday.
It was Monday. Woo! A whole week of fun game development ahead of us. Yeah.
Quick question. Am I cutting any out of that out?
Kind of funny.
I'm just making sure.
Yeah, it's not super funny.
I'm not. Yeah, exactly. I'm not freaking GameSpot over here trying to be all professional. You know what I mean? Get out of here. So yeah, you were talking about a new week and everything else. How have you guys been doing with the quarantine business and like not being able to go to the office all the time?
Well, probably similar to everyone else. I mean, the team was really committed to setting up right away. Everyone was like, well, let's set up a bunch of stuff to stay in touch. We'll keep our, you know, our yoga class going. They still meet, you know, I'll keep doing board games at Wednesday lunch, you know, and a lot of social, you know, if there's a happy hour I'm probably missing right now, Friday afternoons. Oh, sorry. It's not Friday,
Monday.
So the team's been really great about like keeping in touch. It is hard What I found there's a couple of things that are biggest challenges, like the families, the people with families have hit, you know, they, especially young kids, it's really hard to work and have young kids in the house and deal with that. And then also, I find it really tiring to be, you were maybe because you're a content creator are on camera on TV on like you're on your laptop all day, but I feel like I'm going to a meeting. I'm going to come into this like little tiny box. I'm going to do this little box. And I feel like as soon as like meetings are over, I go into the bedroom and like lay down for a second. Like, oh my God. I don't know why, because that you know you don't get those little breaks maybe because you don't get up and walk to the kitchen and see everybody and talk. Sure, and stuff like that. And so I feel like that part is a little exhausting. But we're very fortunate. I mean, working in video games, we're very fortunate that we can keep working. There's no interruption to our payroll. Everything has been very smooth in that sense, you know? So we're still working, you know, I would say it's a part of the delay of Psychonauts definitely was that we had to adjust to that, you know, and it slows down a lot of the casual work that gets done in the hallways and stuff like that. But we're adjusting. I look forward to being over.
Yeah.
In a couple of years, whenever it ends.
When you send your daughter to college, it'll be about time.
Virtual college. Yeah.
Tim, as you know, we call our audience the Kind of Funny Best Friends, which means you've been invited to enter the friend zone. This is where our best friends over on patreon.com/kindoffunny wrote in with questions for you. Nice. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay, good.
I'm excited.
It's exactly. You know what I mean? I'm going to cross off Michael's, who's was just Brutal Legend 2 question mark. And you've already
said. Michael. No, not yet. No,
I mean, I was gonna say, do you think never? You think you'll never do it?
No, I never say never. I mean, I love that world. I love working with Jack, and I love heavy metal still. And there's a lot of stuff we didn't do in the first game. There's a lot of stuff I like to do, double the RTS elements, all that stuff. But
really just commit to it, you know?
That I have that idea for that trailer. The trailer for doing Brutal Legend 2 someday would be, well, I got this whole thing anyway. Double the RTS.
We'll forget. It's fine.
Well, it's like a tribal council, like, and you don't know what the game is. And they're just saying, you have led us into victory with you're a great warrior, but your strategies confuse us. And we don't want you to be in charge of strategy anymore. And then then Eddie Riggs reveals himself and he flips him off. And he's like, I'm going to, you know, anyway, I'm not really pitching it right, but I have a whole idea for that.
Sounds good.
Yeah. And why are we talking about? Oh. Never say never, but I definitely am not. It's not anywhere on the horizon because I want to do something new. I have new ideas for games that I haven't done anything brand new for a long time.
Okay. While we're on this and talking about Brutal Legend, even though this is not about getting a Brutal Legend 2, David Mertz writes in to patreon.com/kindoffunny and says, hi, Tim. I love Jack Black in Brutal Legend, and I'm really looking forward to his role in Psychonauts 2 after the trailer that dropped during the Xbox conference. How did you two meet, and how did you get Jack Black involved in multiple of your games, especially since he's only voice acted for two games that were not made by Double Fine? Thanks.
What games did you? I got to find out what those are and crush them.
Get rid of
them. Very possessive. Yeah. I think we were still with Vivendi at the time. And they, you know, we talked about, you know, we want to get it for voice. We want to get like a Jack Black, like, you know, because he was part of the inspiration for that character. We always said it was like Jack Black and Glenn Danzig had a baby or just made out for a little bit. But, and they're like, what about Jack Black? I'm like, oh, surely. And I think it must have been through their talent connections that we got a meeting set up. And Jack agreed to the meeting because he was actually a Psychonauts fan. He had played Psychonauts. And his friend, the Syphil and Ollie guy that he does a lot of movies with. Remember Syphil and Ollie? You remember that TV show with the puppets?
Really
funny. Yeah. I'm blanking on that guy's name, but I totally Lynch.
I don't know who uses the puppet usually. You know what I mean?
Liam Lynch. He's the director of like Pick a Destiny and stuff. He was a big Psychonauts fan. That's too much detail. Anyway,
we're trying to keep you from picking up mirrors.
Jack was like on his fan, so he agreed to the meeting, and I brought down. We went to like the Four Seasons. We sat on the roof of the Four Seasons by the pool, and very Hollywood. And I had this binder full of concept art. You know, Scott Campbell's picture of Eddie Riggs and a lot of the backgrounds and all the, because we had been sitting around drawing for a long time, and we had tons of art. And I was just flipping through, and I was giving him the pitch, and I felt like he just really responded to it. And he's like, "Yeah, this does seem," because it's very inspired by, I think, a general take on the situation that Jack always had and Tenacious D always had, which is that it's fully aware of the ridiculousness of heavy metal, but also fully into it. not ironically into heavy metal, but like fucking like in the same ways that other bands like I mean, Tenacity is funny, but they're also, they take their rocking very seriously. They're not half-assing the rock and roll in their shows. And the same with like Death Clock, you know, they're like, they're really into metal. You can tell they're really into it, and they're not making fun of it, but they're aware, they're not afraid to deal with the silly part of it, you know, like, you know, the, you know, the over the top dramatic parts of it. So anyway, it just clicked. And then we spent a lot of time together in the studio, and him and me and Chris Brown are our voice director, and we had a great time. And so we've done further shenanigans at like E3, doing stuff on the stage, you know, in the Coliseum or something like that. And we just hang out. Just nice guy. Hit it off. It's really fun to meet people like that, because you're used to this kind of bigger, larger than life, like public persona, but they're very just creative people. Like a lot of people you meet who are big, you know, you think of them as like Hollywood types, and you think of their careers and their fame more than the craft. And then the craft of it, they're just creative people who want to put on the show, you know, and they just like you. And so when you get together in the studio and you're like, what is Eddie Riggs? What do I care about? And what they just sit down there just talking about, like, yeah, I think of him this way, and I think he would say this in the situation. And then when they're doing something on stage, or, you know, doing voice stuff, they just want to put on an entertaining show for people, just like you do. So it's fun to collaborate with people like that.
That's awesome. Now, speaking of that, it's almost like you rehearsed this and you didn't, sir. Josh T writes into patreon.com/kindoffunny and says, you've already worked with Jack Black. What's another dream collaboration, no matter how crazy, you would like to do?
Gosh.
Sky's the limit.
Did I rehearse that? Like, do I have a really good answer to that? Because I can't think.
No,
of
well,
one.
You were just talking about collaboration. Like, literally, your last sentence mentioned collaboration. Then this one mentions collaboration.
I mean, I don't know. I've not thought about that. I mean, Jack's pretty cool. He worked with Elijah too, Elijah Wood, and
sure,
yeah, he was great too. And those are all been like surprises. I never expected to.
You never set out to do that, right? How did Elijah Wood happen? Was it a similar thing that you got? I want an Elijah Wood type for this.
He made the mistake of tweeting at me. He heard about the Kickstarter and he tweeted the Kickstarter. I was like, oh, hey, yeah, that's great. And then he's just, because he used to play LucasArts Adventure Games. I mean, he liked the Indiana Jones ones more than the ones that I worked. He can quote Indiana Jones and all day long, but he's
like, what about Full Throttle? What do you got for me? And he's like,
yeah.
Motorcycles were cool.
So yeah, that's the thing. I think a lot of game developers were pretty aware of the big Hollywood names that are big nerds, you know, Captain Marvel lady.
Brie Larson. Yeah. That's
big nerd. You can tell she's
a big
nerd.
Now, if you want her to be, well, she was on Gary Whitta's show, but yeah, if you want her in your games, you should probably recognize her name. You know what I mean?
I wanted to make sure that you knew.
Tweet Captain Marvel lady. I'm not sure if she's going to be inclined to come be in part of any of the movie.
Once they've been on Gary Whitta's show, that's pretty much
tainted goods. You don't want them anymore.
Yeah. I've been on that show. I don't even want to talk to myself anymore after being on that show.
T-Pain, he burned a bridge with me. I can't speak to him. I've been on it as well. Like, you know what I mean? Like, can't do it. I like this one from Gabriel Hernandez Jr., a.k.a. Enematic, who wrote it and said...
Oh, but Brie Larson, that would be a great collab.
That's who you're putting out there?
That was what I was leading around to, like, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Captain Marvel lady.
I know her name.
Use that clip. She's really going to want to be working with you. That's great.
You set me up. You know I know everything about... I watched her in Room. I was way before Captain Marvel.
Way before. Oh my
way
god!
Before.
You been
at
there
least a year.
The beginning of her career. My apologies.
Yeah.
Oh wow. Sorry, I didn't realize you go that far back with her. Back to Gabriel. Long time listener, first time writer. My question pertains to, I guess, motivation. Currently, we are all experiencing life, but in a sense, everything and everyone is at a standstill, making the motivation in folks stall. As a prolific creator, how do you continually maintain the motivation and desire to keep finding new, interesting ideas for games? Is there ever a worry that you'll lose the fire, the motivation to explore new avenues? And do you have any advice for any of us who are currently experiencing a drought?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, you know, a really important thing, which is to be in touch with what the fire in your belly, as it were, and how I think a lot of mistakes people make is thinking that they have this one fire that's going to last them their whole career. You know, like, oh, I really like a certain kind of game, or I make this kind of game, and I, you know, and the fact is, in our lives, we get these passions for things that come and go and they change all the time. And there's things that seem magical about video games that don't seem magical forever. Like just from me being there from the very beginning when I was a kid, the Magnavox Odyssey that came to our house, right? Like it was magic to see like lights moving on the TV screen that were under our control. Like that was like, what? I'm moving a Pong paddle like this. It was I could see the little lights, RGB lights. Anyway, it was magic. And then that's it's not really that magic anymore. Like, like the first time I saw a 3D character, like the Battlezone tanks or something like that, or Alone in the Dark, and I was playing that piece, like you could see a character from multiple sides. Like it's incredible. And making something that world seemed incredible. And then now you expect everything to just look like a movie and you don't care.
Her hair doesn't move right.
God. Yeah. And so, but it's important to me that doesn't mean the magic doesn't mean magic doesn't exist. It's just that you have to like constantly be open to, it's going to sound really, now that I've used the word magic, everything's going to sound super fucking corny. Like you have to be open to new magic. No, make a bumper sticker of that. But you have to be just open to new inspiration. I don't know. I guess like letting your brain is another metaphor. Too many metaphors. Another metaphor. Your brain is like a dog. You're like, you can't control it 100%. You can't like lock it in a cage, except for at night when it sleeps.
Sure.
But you can't like, if you take it for a dog for a walk and the dog really wants to sniff something, you'd let it sniff something. But if it wants to like roll in a, like I have a friend whose dog likes to roll in like dead animals it finds, like just like get that stink all over. Like there's some things you do pull it away from, some things you let it go. And then you kind of have this tug, you know, back and forth with your dog about controlling it and not controlling it. And I think your brain is the same way. You have to let it, sometimes you just let it run. You're like, my brain's really getting into Rubik's cubes right now. And I don't know why. And that's like, you just gotta like go for it. Just let it go. All the explore that all the way until you're ready to like pull that leash back in. And sometimes you have to control your brain and sometimes you don't. And I think that's the way you find new inspirations, and just follow anything that makes you feel excited, because it's really hard. Because some days you do wake up and you're like, oh, I just do not care about this stuff anymore. And then just realizing those feelings pass. Mm. And the other thing I do is free writing. You ever do free writing? You ever check that out? Okay, so I have this notebook right here next to my beard brush.
Yeah.
Like you just look at like a notebook and like a pen. And if you sit down, for a set amount of time, it could be 2 minutes or 15 minutes or an hour, and you just have to write. But you can't stop moving your pen, even if you have nothing to say. You just write the same word over and over. Your word, and you just can't stop. And if you do that, it turns off the editor in your head, and you just start to like free form, just thinking on the page, blah blah blah. And I've had so many like game ideas while doing that, and just like just by doing it. And some days nothing happens. Some days it's just stupid. I just complain about being sleepy and hungry and stuff like that. And then some days I just spit out an entire game idea, and it's just spending a daily period where you're open to new ideas is important. I feel like I've been talking for like 10 hours. Is that?
I got one question left for you, and you're fine. Don't worry.
You're gonna be like, your mic hasn't been working for about 15 minutes.
We hate to interrupt you. It turns out this is just a dress rehearsal. We didn't record any of this. Final question before we let you have a weekend / Monday evening. Parker Luckenbach writes into patreon.com/kindoffunny and says, "Hey Tim, I love the visual styles for all of your games, or for all of the games you've been a part of. Growing up, they all stood out from the other games on the shelf. Looking back at your entire career, is there an aesthetic you're the most proud of?"
First of all, I love that name. That guy's got a really good
Parker
name.
Luckenbach, yeah.
Luckenbach. It sounds like a delicious, like a peanut butter or something, you know, like a popcorn or a jelly.
Oh, yeah. It's something you're eating. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. An aesthetic that I'm really pleased about. I mean, like every game, there's something. I mean, in Brutal Legend, we achieved, like, it was really true to my personal relationship with heavy metal. Like, I really feel like every moment in that is like, yeah, that came out of a real honest place about what I love about heavy metal and the aesthetics of it. But also seeing, just liking different artists like Scott Campbell, like seeing a world like Psychonauts where it's really like, this is how Scott draws. And we brought like a whole world of his art style to life. This is amazing. This is awesome. And you know, Broken Age with Nathan Stapley's art style, you know, like it's really just about collaborating with great artists and just seeing, can we make something that looks true to their style and therefore will be unique on the shelf, as it were. That always makes me happy.
Tim, you always make me happy. Thank you for coming through today.
It's beautiful. Thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah, congratulations. 20 years of Double Fine, of course. Is there anything you're doing? Is there like a sale people should go? How do people celebrate 20 years of Double Fine?
Let me just say this because by then it'll probably all be announced. I'm not sure. Let's double check with Spaff and you can cut this out later. But we're going to be doing a big bundle, the Humble Bundle.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're announcing on Monday then, right? You're announcing on Monday because
I don't
Monday.
Know when we're announcing. God, so next week is the anniversary. So let's just say this has been totally cleared by everyone. Yeah, we're doing a bundle of everything we can get our hands on that Double Fine's ever done and putting it in this big bug bundle.
That's awesome. All right, check out Humble Bundle.
And we're going to do some other just special celebratory things. If it wasn't for quarantine, we were going to have a big party and let everyone come and have a big, huge thing. But maybe next year.
I'll just drive by the office and wave at it for you.
Good. Tell me. Yeah, pick up my packages. Tell me if there's any packages there.
Oh, God. That's going to be the worst trying to get back in this thing. Tim stole my Xbox shirt. And, let's not even get into it right now. Ladies and gentlemen, this, of course, has been We Have Cool Friends. Each and every Monday, we come to you with a new best friend to talk to. As you know, it's one of our irregularly scheduled programming, meaning it either sometimes happens on random days, it doesn't happen at all. Who knows? This week, you get to your next cool friend is none other than Major Nelson himself, Larry Hurd, coming on through. Thursday, Larry is on, Major Nelson. So get questions in patreon.com/kindafunnyforlarry, aka Major Nelson. Do you have any questions you want to write down for him or send my way, Tim?
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's something good about what's Tim Schaefer really like, because we work together now. Yeah.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, you got it.
Yeah. I'd like to know.
Yeah, I'd like to know as well. I'm sure the world would. Tim, thank you so much.
Thanks so much, both of you. Thank you. Everybody, look at that beard brush.
Yeah, exactly, Kevin. We got to have an update on that when you break that in, all right?
Yeah, it sounds good.
He turns it on sometimes. He turns
sounds
on the mic
good.
Sometimes.
That's good.
All right. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, it's been our pleasure to serve you.